postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Hello, mighty parent or parent-to-be. I'm Adriana Lozada, and as we forge on with our care provider series, I'm really excited to bring you a story today that showcases how to birth in community within a hospital setting, because the truth is that you can receive care from many people during your birth, not just from your medical team. So in my mind, the words care provider include a multitude way beyond just your doctor or your midwife. Now, if your wishes are that your extended family be a part of your birth, then clearly there are some really important conversations that need to take place way ahead of those first contractions. And then leading up to labor, each person has to figure out the work they need to do ahead of time in order to show up how you need them to. To help model what that would look like, today I will be talking to the amazing Laurel Gourier. Laurel is a co-host of the Birth Stories in Color podcast, as well as a birth worker and reproductive justice advocate. Now, Laurel's constant, ever-present search for joy is evident in her storytelling. You'll notice how she and her team bring mindfulness to all of their decisions as they navigate a really long birth with continuous back labor and so many course changes. And because holding on to joy had been a key part of Laurel's birth plan, to be honest, at many points, her labor seems like a big party. Before we start, I also want you to know that I have had the immense pleasure of sharing my own birth story on Birth Stories in Color. So whenever you can, make sure you go listen to that as well. You are listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Welcome, Laurel, to the show. I am so very excited to have you here and hear your story. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you identify?
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I love to travel. So I've been lots of places, have lived lots of places. I am a mom of two. I have a 5-year-old daughter, 3-year-old son. I'm also a wife. I do birth work, full spectrum, however you land, whatever your support is, I am there to help you, help guide you, help support you. I love birth storytelling in all shapes and forms. So I also host a birth storytelling podcast with a doula sister and friend. And then I recently have started doing birth photography. I'm absolutely obsessed with the way that birth shows up.
Well, and let's make sure we mention the name of your podcast, which is
Birth Stories in Color.
Birth Stories in Color, which if I'm going to let everybody know, I shared my birth story that I don't often share on Birth Stories in Color. So you can check out that episode as well if you want to hear.
Yes.
Yeah. So take us back. Your daughter is now, you were told me before that she's 5. Take us back to that time when you were just pregnant or figuring out what you wanted for your birth wishes. What were you hoping to have and how did you prepare?
Yeah. So in the beginning, when we first found out we were pregnant, both my husband and I really felt like everybody's like comments to us were centered on the pain aspect of birth, on the negative parts of birth. And I remember one day, like we were both sitting around and I was like, I don't know, like I'm loving this. I'm very excited about this. And I just don't feel like what I'm feeling is matching what everybody is telling me. Like I know those things will show up, but it just, they're not syncing. So from there, we really were intentional about how we talked about the experience, how we absorbed what others were saying. And I just knew from the beginning that I know that I want this birth to be centered in like peace and joy. And I really want to connect with this birth and be very in tune to it. And so that's what I did. Like I set intentions about that. I read everything that I could get my hands on. I was obsessed with watching birth videos on YouTube, just trying to grasp any sort of like positive outlook about the birth experience. And so, yeah, that was the intention from the beginning of really setting out to have a birth that just felt like ours and felt like how we envisioned it.
And I love the centering of the process in peace, joy, and connection instead of centering in the pain. Mm-hmm. That's such a, like, even that shift is so radical that that's a stronger preparation than as many books as you're going to read. Or
right.
Like that's going to set the tone for everything. I love it.
Right. Exactly.
So then, were you a birth worker then?
No. So my background is in special education, specifically those on the autism spectrum. And so I kind of, in my head, I was like, well, in my work, when we talk about like being vulnerable, I feel like this is going to be one of those things where I have to be very vulnerable and very in tune with my emotions. And so I knew that there were people who did that, like who helped you with that. And then I found out that like the actual name for it was a doula. And so we did a lot of research about doulas, but we were just not in a position to hire one. But no, I was not a birth worker yet. But I was very in tune to birth work at that time.
It's so funny because I can so relate to the having a birth without a doula and then becoming a doula, right? What were we thinking? Did you regret afterwards not having a doula? Or?
I wouldn't even say regret, but I know that I when I reflect back on the birth, I'm always like, a doula would have been beneficial. I mean, my birth team was stacked. I had my parents, my husband, my in-laws were also there, and one of my best friends who also helped document the birth. So I was like, I feel prepared. Like, I've got my people. But yes, a doula would have still been very helpful, for sure.
You had a party in that room.
I had a party.
So how did it all begin? How did that party start?
Yeah. So I was 41 and 5 days, 41 and five. I had midwives at the hospital. I had contemplated home birth, but we lived in an apartment and I was like, I don't know how people do that. That's different. So let's just do a hospital with midwives. So I found a great midwifery practice, and around 40 weeks, there was discussions about, okay, what are we going to do to help naturally bring on things? And baby girl was just not coming. I tried all the things. And I do remember getting close to 41 weeks. My midwife was like, well, why don't we try, you know, doing a membrane sweep? And I was like, okay, fine. Did that. And that was the moment where I really was like, yeah, I don't actually know anything about the anatomy of my body. I just remember being like, where are you going during this cervical test?
where are these membranes you're going to sweep?
Yeah, where are these membranes? But from that, we did find out that I was 1 centimeter. But we did decide from that point on that I should probably be scheduled for an induction, which that wasn't what I wanted. But I also knew that we were moving into a space that it was probably time to like support her coming with some help. And I, again, from that point, started to get into a mindset of like, what do I want this induction to look like? So she was scheduled, like I said, I was 41 and five, scheduled induction. My parents came in. We were living in DC at the time. So my parents came in that morning. I was scheduled to go in that night. My in-laws had come in the day before. And I remember like my husband had to go to work that morning. So I was at the house by myself. Took a long shower. And I remember just like sitting on the couch and being like, wow, tonight, everything changes. And just able to kind of sit in my own reflection about what was going to happen, trying to like prepare myself mentally for what this induction might look like. And then my parents came over and I remember my dad being like, we should have a champagne before we go to the hospital. And I'm like, Dad.
He was ready to party.
He was ready to party. I'm like, Dad, no. So we all drive to the hospital. And I had also informed my best friend that we were going in that night. So she was coming in from New York on the train. And, you know, they had said, oh, your room, like, come at 8 p.m. You'll be ready at 8 p.m. So I get there and they're like, we don't have any rooms. And then I like felt myself kind of like shut down at that point because I was very prepared for like, you're going to go in. It's going to be time. It's like everything going in order. So that did take some shifting. And I remember being really upset also because two of the midwives who were on call were two of the midwives who I hadn't met. So I just felt like, oh no, things are already starting to derail here. Like this is not okay. But we sat in the hallway while we waited and played cards. And my family did a really good job of like keeping me distracted and really trying to center me back in like, this is just part of how things shift. Like it's okay. So we finally get my room. I think like it was an hour, hour and a half. We go in, get me set up, and they started me with Cervidil. And I remember my midwife saying like, we'll see how this goes. Sometimes some people's bodies react very quickly to it. And some people, you know, after the full 12 hours of waiting, nothing. I was one of those people who nothing. So 12 hours go by. My parents were staying at a hotel. So they went back. My in-laws and my best friend went back to our house because we also had a dog at the time to take care of him. And Frankie and I kind of got some rest. And I had no cramp, nothing. Like I was just chilling for the full 12 hours.
And I want people to hear that, because you think, oh, inductions, we'll just get going with this. And actually, if you're jumpstarting your body from zero, it can take a long time. It can take days.
Exactly.
And also the fact that you're having an induction, like there's so much uncertainty attached to it anyways. There's this idea that, oh, we'll know what will happen. Induction, we go in, have a baby, and right. already it's like, oh, but we don't have a room. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of mental game with the inductions.
Yes. And I do think that kind of happened for all of us. I think my parents especially and my in-laws thought like, yeah, you go into induction, you have the induction, and it'll be quick. And when the midwife first said like it might be 12 hours, we all were like, wait, what? Okay. And it was nice to have that time when everybody had left for Frankie and I to like, again, get ourselves in a headspace of this might take some time and that's okay. This birth plan has shifted already a couple of ways. How are we going to roll with that?
How did you roll with that?
12 hours hit. They did the cervical check. No change. And I felt myself like freak out a little bit because I also knew from there we were going to have to introduce Pitocin, which I knew was going to intensify things. And it was something that I was hoping not to have. My midwife definitely caught on to that because I remember her being like, we don't have to like start it right now. Eat some pizza, because my father-in-law had bought pizza for the nurses, for everybody. So everybody was eating pizza. So she was like, eat some pizza, take another shower, get settled, and we'll start the Pitocin nice and slow. And we'll just see how your body responds and we'll go from there. And I will say that my midwives were wonderful. I had an amazing birth team. I'm very, very fortunate and grateful that it worked out in that way. They were just so in tune with my family. Like we had five people in a room. We weren't supposed to have five people, but they were like, whatever. Like, let's, like they just rolled with it. You do you. Which was so wonderful. But yes, we started the Pitocin and immediately my body was like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing.
And I want to say, even though your cervix hadn't dilated, there must have been some change in those 12 hours for them to move from a prostaglandin to soften and ripen and get your cervix ready to Pitocin, which is focused on dilation. So your cervix did change. We just obsess on dilation, but there's so many other things that maybe would have been helpful to focus you in the moment and say there isn't no change.
Right.
It's just, this is what changed and now it's time for this other thing.
Right. And I love that you say that because in that moment, not knowing all the things that I do know, I can't even remember if they said those things to me because I knew in my head that dilation was all that you were supposed to do. Well, assumed that that was like the thing that you focus on. So I don't even know if maybe she said those other things, but I was so dialed in of like, you mean I didn't dilate past anything else? Like, what do you mean? So yes, I love that you bring that up, that there are other factors that we're looking for your body, like that your body is making change.
And often people have to ask about them because it's not just we all, nurses, everybody focuses just on the dilation. Mm-hmm. And as a birth worker, I'm sure you've had the situation where I ask the provider,
yep.
Can you tell me also about station and softening
exactly.
And give me more information? Don't just give me dilation.
Right. Exactly.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting with just one set of filters from their classic purifier, making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AQUATRU.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. With Mother's Day coming up fast, are you looking to get your mom, grandma, or mother figure a gift that they'll actually love? You know, something that is treasured instead of dying out or collecting dust? If so, you need to know about MyLifeInABook.com, which is a service that helps turn their life stories into a beautiful book that can be passed down. How amazing is that? And the process couldn't be easier. Basically, if they can use email, they can create their book. Every week, My Life in a Book will send them an email with a prompt question to get them started. And if they don't like the question, they can easily edit it or change it. We gave a My Life in a Book to a family member that always wants to document all family get-togethers through images. And let me tell you, the process of sending the gift was super simple, even letting us choose the date we wanted the gift to be sent. I'm so looking forward to discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, and the challenges she has overcome. And since My Life in a Book lets you add an image with each answer, she can now share the story that goes along with her many photos. Another great thing is that the answers can be edited at any time before the book is printed, in case she wants to add anything else. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off today.
So things started to get pretty intense. I know that like I was trying to move around the room because I was now on Pitocin. I was having to be monitored. And I just remember I hated the monitors. I know a lot of people say that. And they were just annoying. And I only position that really felt good was I either was on the ball on the side of the bed, kind of like curled over, or on hands and knees, kind of on the floor in the bed. But every time I did that, the monitor would like lose. So there was this back and forth of like getting repositioned on the monitor, having the monitor off, walking to the bathroom, working through contractions. It was just like this cycle. And I remember being like, I'm just over these monitors. Like, please, someone figure out how to monitor her without me being on the monitor. But I will say again, like my birth team was great in supporting me, like my mom and when I say like supporting me, like all of these people were in the room. And I think a lot of times people are very surprised that I had my in-laws and my parents. And I want to say that there was a conversation that was had with all of them about what it would look like. I was very open of, if you're going to be in that space, I need your energy to match mine. If you are unable to help or support, or you feel like it's too much, I need you to leave because I cannot have that. I need you to be on the same page as me. I will be naked, so you handle that as you like. I want you to be present, but this is what I'm expecting for your presence. And they all understood that.
I love that.
And there were moments like when I would come out of the birth vault, like I could see like my dad maybe would have turned because I think maybe it was too much. Or I know that my mother-in-law at some points had like walked out because she was crying. So I know that they all were doing that. And I'm grateful that they did honor that request from me because I did need them. But it was intense. And I had a lot of back labor. So I don't even really remember what front contractions feel like. All of my pain and discomfort was in my back. And I tried to describe it to somebody once and I was like, it felt like after every contraction, like my spine was like breaking and then reforming for like 1 second and then re-breaking. And I just, nothing was helping. Like there's a moment I know, like the midwife came in and she's doing like counter pressure on me, like trying to support me. And I'm just like, nothing is helping me. This is exhausting. And a new nurse came in and they were like, well, why don't you try nitrous oxide? Because my birth plan did not include having an epidural. I wanted to go as long as possible without one. So I was like, sure, yeah, I will do anything at this point. Let's try the nitrous oxide first. I hated the nitrous oxide. Like the first moment of putting it on my face, I was like, this is making me feel like I'm going to throw up. I don't want to do this. Let's not do this. So I'm like fighting them to just like, I'm like, just remove the nitrous oxide. I don't want to deal with that. But I'm also at this point starting to like have those shakes, the transitional shakes. I'm throwing up a bit more. I'm starting to have that feeling of I'm out of control in this moment. And I know around this time too, my midwife had offered, well, why don't we see where you are? And I said, okay, sure, let's do that. I don't think that she was even able. The contractions were just so painful that I couldn't even lay still. And I know she tried and I was like, I just want you out. Please don't. And she respected that wish and we just left it at that. But that was also the moment where I was like, okay, like this feels excruciating and something has to change. And I know that at that time there was going to be a midwife shift. So both midwives had come in. My new nurse had come in and they asked, what do you want to do in this moment? And I remember my husband, like I'm leaning over the bed, I'm hanging on to him and he kind of just like looks me in my eyes and he's like, let's shut out everybody else. What do you want to do? And he's like crying. I'm crying. And at that moment, I mean, he was very much like, I know that you, what your birth plan said, but like, what do you need in this moment? And I said at that point, like, okay, I think it's time to move forward with an epidural. And at that point, it had been about 30 hours that I had been, since starting the induction, that I had been moving through. I was just tired. Like I was exhausted. And I think everybody knew at that point that I needed something to just let my body settle. But they were, of course, waiting for me to come to that realization without being pushy, which I appreciated. But I also needed for him to tap in and be like, it's you. That's it. Nobody else. It's you. So I got the epidural placed and immediately knocked out. Like, I think I was asleep before they could even see if it like fully took. I don't even know. But I do remember before falling asleep, my husband, because he had, you know, everybody kind of had been up, but mostly him. He like looks at me and he goes, is it okay if I go to sleep too?
Oh, that's so sweet.
And I'm like, yes.
And it seems like he was so supportive and so sad. I love the visual of you guys looking into each other's eyes and also realizing, like having that, reading the space, knowing that something needed to change, not just you feeling that something needed to change, but everybody, and then turning to you to say, okay, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Because again, with an induction, the goal is to get contractions to be in a pattern of every 2 to 3 minutes lasting a minute or longer. So that's a transition-like pattern, mm-hmm. but they want to get to that as soon as possible. So sometimes you end up having this transition-like pattern, not just for transition, but for hours before. Mm-hmm. So that's a disconnect for sure. And if on top of that, you were having persistent back labor, I can't even. I mean, I can because that's what I had, the persistent back labor. Right. We've talked about this, but because I know how it feels, like, oh, yes, it's too much.
It was all consuming. Like, I just felt like my entire body was working so hard and there was no break ever. Like, there was no pause. There was no time for me to catch my breath. And so I was exhausted by that time. So fell asleep. I think everybody got some rest and I woke up maybe an hour or two after, like refreshed. I'm like, hi, everyone. We're here. The midwives came in and said, you know, how do you feel about us doing a check, kind of seeing where you are? And I was like, sure, let's do that. And they did a check and they were like, yeah, it's time. If you're ready to, if you're feeling, you know, some of those urges, that pressure, like let's go for it.
Were you feeling the desire to push?
I wasn't feeling the desire to push, but I definitely like I would say that they did a fair job on my epidural, because at that point I could still feel, not necessarily any type of pain, but I could feel that pressure. I wasn't feeling like the pressure to push, but I could feel the pressure during contraction. So I knew when they were coming. So I was like, yeah, let's go for it. And I just remember giggling like, wow, okay, baby, like we're doing this. And so they got me a mirror because I definitely wanted to be able to see. And so my husband's holding my left leg. My mother-in-law is holding my right leg. My dad's like sitting behind me. My father-in-law is kind of like off to the side. And my mom is holding both of my sisters on FaceTime, like in front. So again, party, like community birth here.
Yes.
And so we start pushing. And I mean, I could feel the pressure. So I was pushing with the pressure. Something that I don't remember and that I have been told, but there was a point where like I was pushing and they kind of had me stopped. And in that moment, I didn't pick up on any of this, but my daughter did have shoulder dystocia. So the way that it has been told to me is like during that moment, they were actually like pushing down on my stomach. And, you know, my support people were saying they were kind of freaking out, but I'm like, I have no idea that anything is going on, which, you know, I appreciate that they kind of kept me in the zone to be focused. But she came out. We did not know if we were having a boy or girl. We love surprises. So we were very much like, let's just see when this baby is born. And so we had said that I would be the one to kind of like let the room know. So they pulled her up, put her on my chest. And I just remember like crying, like, it's a girl, it's a little girl. So everybody's crying. She's like sitting on my chest. They let her sit there for a second and then took her because of the shoulder dystocia, just to make sure that everything was okay. But she was fine. She Yay. Was beautiful. She was fine. 8 pounds, 9 ounces. They made sure she was good and then brought her back over to me and we just hung out.
Oh, so good. So good. And from what I'm hearing, the shoulder dystocia wasn't really a big thing. It was just like it happened and then they quickly resolved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, the only way that I knew that, I mean, they told me, of course, after she was back on my chest, but hearing kind of the like small intensity of it came from when everybody was reflecting back on the experience.
Labor land is a thing. Labor land, you go into deeper brain altered states.
Yes.
You don't, yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, did you tear?
No, no tears.
I want people to hear that. 8 pounds, mm-hmm. 9 ounces, no tears. It's not the size of the baby.
Nope.
What was the most surprising thing for you out of this experience?
That I birthed a whole human. I think that, I mean, like, in all honesty, that really did blow my mind. I'm an athlete. Was an athlete. I'm no longer an athlete. I was an athlete. And so I know part of my prep, I always kept saying, like, this is kind of going to be like when, you know, like you train for a big game, like you train. That's kind of like what my prep looked like physically and body wise. And how I like was like, okay, this is the type of breathing I'll need to use. Of course, it is completely different. But like you said, that I was able to tap into this other source of myself that I had no idea was possible. Like even with how, because it was painful, like I'm very honest with people about that experience, like that birth was painful and that birth did take a lot from me. I still feel the same joy. Like, I just feel joyous about it because I know that I did that. My body did that. And I'm so proud about that. An 8 pound, 9 ounce whole human I birthed.
You sure did.
Yes.
It's not what happens during the birth. And we say this all the time. I know you do too. It's not what happens during the birth. Is that you feel supported, heard, validated, respected, that centered, that it's honoring your wishes. That makes the difference.
Absolutely.
So good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then, and we wanted to focus on your first birth, the birth of your daughter, but you have a son and that was a home birth. What made you switch from hospital to home?
Yeah. So after having my daughter, and I remember like sharing, because again, we were the first in our group, like sharing about birth. And I'm a very open person in general. So I was very honest with everyone about the whole experience. People just were very surprised by the joy that I was able to share out of that, because I could have easily been like, the pain, it was horrible. Da-da-da-da-da. And I, like I said, I was honest with, yes, it, there was pain involved, but there also was like that pain had purpose. I was able to really tap into my body in a way that I had never done before, ever. And I mean, I learned so much about my body and myself, but after like reflecting with the midwives and postpartum, like reflecting with friends, when it came time, like when I was pregnant with my son, two big things were, maybe three, let me see as I speak them out. We moved to a new state, and in moving to Columbus, Ohio, I learned about what childbirth was around here. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable being in a hospital. I don't think that I'm going to get the same experience that I had at the other hospital, and that just doesn't feel safe for me. And I also had learned a lot more in between that time about maternal outcomes, and especially what that looked like for Black mothers. And I didn't feel like that would be a safe choice. I had also at that point connected with a midwife, a home birth midwife who I loved. So I knew that I would be able to get the support I needed. And I also knew from my previous birth and how I connected with birth, that home birth just felt more in sync for me. Yeah, it just felt more in sync with where I was at in the process. And again, like I said, I was thinking about home birth with my daughter, but I think because of placement, it didn't make sense. But it definitely made sense at this point that, yeah, like, let's do this.
And it makes such a difference when you, again, it's about informing your intuition, right? You had connected with the midwife, you built that trust, you had seen home births, you'd seen the variations of what happens in a hospital with different providers or different hospitals at home, like all these different places. It really broadens your spectrum of what it's possible. And then you had all these choices.
Yeah. And I will say the interesting thing was, so we moved to Columbus, where my husband teaches is like an hour outside of Columbus. And I also knew that if I did a home birth there, if at any point there was a need for a transfer, it would be at a hospital that I wasn't comfortable with. So I said, all right, let's see if my parents will be okay with us having a home birth at their home. So there was this other layer of informing them that there was an option, that this was an option, sorry, and that this was still the same for them. It was about safety. They were like, they didn't know home births were a thing. They were like, is this going to be safe? And I'm like, for us, it's safer for us. It makes sense for us. And so they got to be a part of all my midwifery appointments. They got to see that in real action, and they got to witness a home birth. Cause again, I think I just have community births. Like everybody's just there. That's how I roll. And so they got to be a part of that. And so now they get to share out to others about, like, my parents. I remember, like, when people would ask them, so where, you know, like, what hospital is Laurel having the baby? My mom was like, we're actually having the baby in our basement. And I'd be like, well, can you rephrase?
Is this the same person that wanted to pop a champagne right before even going to the hospital?
So I'm like, okay, love that you're excited, but let's just home birth. Sounds a little creepy, just in the basement.
But that's so good. And yeah, you just continue the party wherever you go for all of this. I love the support and making it communal, bringing your parents into this, because it's a lot of responsibility. Let's be honest. Like,
yes,
when you say I'm going to have a home birth, you have to take on a different role in how you approach your birth.
Right.
Which is totally doable, but right. You just, you know, have to be honest with yourself. And I feel it's fantastic that you had that support from your whole community and your parents. And because people who have a home birth, you hear so often that they're getting so much pushback from their family and they almost have to keep it a secret from their family.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so joyous to hear the flip side of something completely different, of community buy-in into your choices.
Exactly. Exactly. And then for the people, like there were some people who we just didn't share it with because we knew there was going to be that pushback. And I was like, I don't need that. And again, having honest conversations with my parents about this, I was like, you are at any point allowed to say no. If you're afraid, if there's fear, we all need to share that out now. Because we cannot have fear as a part of this. And I remember like having that conversation. My mom was like, well, what are you afraid of? And I was like, I'm actually not afraid of the birth. I have no fear. Like, I know I'm capable. I was like, my only fear is that if necessary, there would be a transfer. But I also feel fully supported by my care provider, by my doula, by you all, that if that was a choice that needed to be made, I would be okay. But as far as the birth, I got this. So I think them hearing me talk about fear, allowing them to express their fear around it, made it easier for them to be like, okay, this feels like we can do this.
Do you feel that the fact that they were part of your journey in the first birth, like they were so such an integral part and you had already had that conversation way back of this is how you show up for me in this space, that work was already done. And then now you took it to a next level. You're like, okay, now yes, let's do this, guys.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I would send them like, okay, you watch this birth video. Like, this is what it might look like. I started giving them things to read. And then at my appointments, they were then able to talk to my midwife and be able to see and have those conversations. Whereas like, you know, in the hospital, you don't get to do that. They don't get to see that other side. And I think the reason that community birth is so important to me is one, because I need my community. I very much thrive off of that. I also know the change that it can have. Like my siblings were also present. And so now as they're talking about expanding their families, they're like, okay, well, how do we like prepare for a home birth? How do we know if that's like an option? So that there is this continued conversation of there's so many different types of births. You just have to do what feels right for you.
Is there anything that you wanted to make sure we got to that we haven't?
I mean, I guess just sitting back on and like reiterating the honest conversations around your birth space. And that also includes your partner. I knew I wanted a home birth from the beginning, but like I still had to talk to my partner about that. How do you feel about this? How do you think you're able to show up to support me? And not even just like on the level of, I'll do whatever you want because I love you. Like, no, I need to actually know how you're feeling about it so that if those things start to arise during the birth, we can address that. Or you know that you have the space to remove yourself if those things come up for you, because I need you to be at your best on that day. So just having those conversations about the people you want to support or the people you don't want to support or just what you want that space to feel like is really, really important.
Mm. Thank you, Laurel, so much for sharing your stories and for sharing what an interdependent community way of birthing can look like, whether it's in the hospital or at home. Because I think that's what we need more, that interdependence of we're in this mm-hmm. together, because clearly it creates so many deeper bonds.
Yes.
And safeguards against trauma.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I'm just honored that I was able to have that experience twice. And I love my people for showing up.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
That was Laurel Gourier, a wife, mother, birth worker, and reproductive justice advocate. Alongside Danielle Jackson, Laurel co-hosts the Birth Stories in Color podcast, which embraces storytelling as a way to amplify the lived experiences of Black, Indigenous, Asian, Latinx, and multiracial individuals.
Laurel has shared the full story of her son's home birth on Birth Stories in Color. So if you want to listen to that as well, we've placed the link to it on the show notes for this episode. Also, since we spoke, Laurel has had a second home birth to welcome her third baby. It was a fast labor with her midwives walking in the door at the same time Laurel was catching her own daughter. A big, big congratulations to Laurel and the whole family, because you know it had to be a party. You can find Laurel on Instagram at Birth Stories in Color, and you can connect with us at Birthful Podcast. In fact, if you're not driving, we would absolutely love it if you would take a screenshot of this episode and post it to your stories, sharing what your biggest takeaway was from this episode. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes. And while you're there, download your free postpartum preparation plan. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. This episode was produced in part by LWC Studios, Paulina Velasco, Jen Chen, Cedric Wilson, and Kojin Tachido. Thank you so much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pod, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.